everyone, this is Robert Sigliano, and welcome to episode 4 of the New Pilot Pod Blog, The Scenic Route. The weather cleared up here in the Northeast, so Joey and I were looking forward to our next flight on November 7th. Plan was to fly to Hartford, Hotel Foxtrot Delta, from Brookhaven, to get some chicken wings and watch some football. That was the fun goal of this flight. The other goals were proficiency, learning the GPS and autopilot of the Eaglet. Also cross-country flying, to get a good feel of how the Eaglet handles. Reinforcement. Cross-country planning. I hadn't done any since the check ride. Also, I was planning to pick up flight following and open up a flight plan, basically to relearn or reinforce what I had learned during training for cross-country flights. Also, new experiences, landing at an unfamiliar airport and planning the pattern entry. So I woke up on Saturday and completed my nav log and flight plan. I called flight service for a weather briefing, and the weather could not have been better. Clear skies and light winds. Since Hartford has only one runway, 2 and 2-0, I was hoping for a little crosswind, and I got it. The winds were forecasted to be 2-3-0 at 6, so I planned for entry to runway 2-0. At 11:30 a.m., we headed out for Brookhaven. We had the plane from 12 noon until 4 p.m., enough time for the 35-minute flight each way and a lunch of chicken wings and football. Even though the weather gods were smiling on me, the highway gods were not. Sunrise Highway, which I take to Brookhaven, was closed going eastbound because of an accident, and we were detoured onto the service road. This delayed us by well over an hour and a half. We did not get to Brookhaven till after 1 p.m. Now I had a decision to make. You always hear about accident flights that happen because of departing later than planned, or the pilot being rushed. I did not want that to happen to me. Assuming that by the time we got settled in and pre-flighted the plane, wheels up would not be until well after 1:30 p.m. Even though according to my flight plan, it would only take 35 minutes to get there and 35 minutes back, I allotted an hour each way for taxi tie-down delays and whatnot. It on 1 hour to eat and having the wheels up at 3 p.m. in order to make sure I got home before dark, I felt I did not have enough time to get back before sundown. I'm not current for night flying, so it was really important that I got home before it got dark. Taking all this into account, I decided to change the plan. Joey and I had talked about an alternate plan in case the winds at Hartford did not cooperate, or the weather did not cooperate in general. I just didn't think we would have to switch to it because of being delayed because of traffic. The alternate flight was a sightseeing tour of Long Island. We planned to fly eastbound along the north shore of Long Island, around Orient Point, across Gardner's Island to Montauk Point, then west along the south shore back to Brookhaven. Even though the original flight was scrubbed, I still planned to accomplish most of my goals. I still plan to get flight following and to practice using the GPS and autopilot. I also wanted to hand fly the Eaglet at least half the flight so that I could get a good feel of how she handled. This was my first significant time away from the pattern, and I would be in cruise flight for at least an hour, 56 minutes according to my flight plan. So I planned to hand fly until I got to the Montauk Point Lighthouse and then programmed the GPS direct to Suffolk County Airport, Foxtrot Oscar Kilo, and then engage the autopilot. One thing I wasn't sure about was how to ask for flight following on a sightseeing flight. I have only done it when flying to another airport. I saw Ryan at the FBO, and so I asked him. He said just to tell New York Approach that I was flying east along the north shore of Long Island and I want the flight following, but not to expect it because they were very busy that day. Even though Ryan said they were busy, I planned to ask for a flight following anyway. Remember, flight following is on a workload basis, and you are never guaranteed to get it on a VFR flight. In keeping with my plan of keeping Joey engaged and part of the experience, I went into greater detail during the pre-flight. For example, I showed him the pitot tube and told him that during flight the cover opens up, and I told him that the air flows into it and is used by the airspeed indicator to tell us how fast we were flying. I also showed him what to look for during the pre-flight and then let him pre-flight the right side of the plane. Don't worry, I kept a close eye on him and I did all the checks myself after he did them. I even let him drain the fuel from the gascolator. He seemed to really enjoy that, and told him that it should be a blue tint with no water bubbles or dirt. He really enjoyed splattering it across the ground after he was finished. After we finished the pre-flight, Amanda came by with the fuel truck and I had her top it off. I watched as she fueled it and put the gas caps back on, and I had Joey re-drain the fuel, telling him that you should always check again after getting fuel. Before taxiing, we plotted the course on the taxi diagram, as we always do, and as we taxied, I pointed out the runway taxi signs. I would tell Joey what the signs meant. Yellow on black meant we were on that taxiway, and I had him confirm on the taxi diagram where we were and that we were going in the right direction. I felt that this was a good and enjoyable way for Joey to learn airport signs and to get in the habit of following a taxi diagram. The run-up was interesting, to say the least. Right before I was ready to taxi into place, I noticed that gas was spewing from the left wing at the wingtip. Having never seen this before, I was concerned. My first thought was that Amanda forgot to put the gas caps back on. Even if that was not the case, this could not be normal. Gas is not supposed to flow out of a plane. So I announced that I was taxiing back because of fuel leak. It just so happened that Ryan and Mike was in a sport cruiser and heard me. Mike told me to switch to 123.5, and I did. He told me this was normal if the fuel tanks were full, and since I had just topped them off, I was to expect this. Knowing that this was pretty much normal, and all was good, I taxied into position. We took off from runway 24, and I announced that I was making a downwind departure so that I could fly north to the north shore of Long Island. Some of you might be saying, whoa, wait a minute, there's no such thing as a downwind departure. And you would be right. I didn't know this. You see, I did this during my training pretty often at Farmingdale, which is a towered field, and we routinely requested downwind departures. We would turn downwind and continue to climb. Once we got to the point where we could turn on course based on departure procedures, we would. The next day, on Sunday, I went to Brookhaven to meet Joe and help him study for his oral exam, and Ryan was there. As soon as I walked in, he threw out the question, how many ways can you depart a pattern? And I turned to Joe and kind of smugly said, oh, I have my license already. Why don't you answer? And Joe said to me, well, why don't you? So I answered, and of course I said one way was a downwind departure. Ryan said to me, not according to the AIM, the Aeronautical Information Manual. And I said, well, I did one yesterday. And Ryan said that he and Mike were in the sport cruiser, and he heard me. I was set up. They got me. At least my mistake was learning material for Joe. I'm always glad to help out another pilot. Just for those who are wondering where in the AIM this is stated, Chapter 4, Air Traffic Control, Section 433, Traffic Patterns. Figure 432 shows the normal traffic pattern. And number 6, which is departure, states, if departing the traffic pattern, continue straight out or exit with a 45-degree turn to the left when in a left-hand traffic pattern, to the right when in a right-hand traffic pattern, beyond the departure end of the runway after reaching pattern altitude. So basically what this is saying, as Ryan pointed out to me, that there are only two ways to exit a traffic pattern, straight out or on a 45-degree turn, and you stay in those directions until you reach pattern altitude. So Ryan said that if I wanted to do a downwind departure, what I should have done was to exit on a 45-degree turn, continue flying until I got to 500 feet above traffic pattern altitude, and then turn around and fly over the field and then headed on course. Well, now I know. I know not to do a downwind departure. I always say you learn something on every flight, and this was one thing that I did learn. So now on our way, and climbing to cruise, I passed 300 feet, put up the flaps, and turned off the landing lights. I leveled off at 3,000 feet and called New York approach on 118.0, hoping that they would not be too busy to give me flight following. To my surprise, they answered me right away. The controller asked what altitude I was at, and I responded 3,000 feet. I forgot to mention my altitude on my call-up. Oh well, another mistake on this flight. He told me to contact approach on 127.5, so I did. New York approach, experimental November 162 Sierra Foxtrot. November 162 Sierra Foxtrot, go ahead. New York approach, November 162 Sierra Foxtrot, approximately 9 miles to the northeast of Brookhaven, 3,000 feet, eastbound along the North Shore, requesting flight following. November 162 Sierra Foxtrot, squawk 4334 and ident. Wow, pretty easy. I was concerned about how to ask for flight following for a sightseeing flight, and it was a no-brainer. Also, approach control was not too busy. So Joey and I flew along the North Shore, and it was a beautiful day. The trees were a sea of orange and red. Joey commented on all of the farms we were seeing. I said to him that we forget that eastern Long Island has so much farmland. As we flew along, every 15 minutes or so, I asked Joey to check the engine gauges to see if they were all in the green. I want to get him in the habit of always checking the gauges. I would also ask him to look for an emergency landing site. I will say, "We just lost our engine. Where would you land?" He got pretty good at picking out spots. He even did something that a lot of pilots might not do. On one such occasion, I asked him to find a landing spot, and he said to me, "Why not the airport we just passed?" Most pilots look ahead and forget to look back at the places we just passed over. Bravo, Joey. So the Eaglet was humming along between 105 and 115 indicated airspeed. At one point, I explained to Joey that since we were flying at 105 knots indicated airspeed, according to the airspeed indicator, and that the ground speed was 119 knots, according to the GPS, we had a 14-knot tailwind. Again, keeping him engaged and trying to teach him a little bit about flying as we go. Flying along, we kept talking about the sights that we were seeing, and Joey was enjoying it. He showed no signs of discomfort, even when we hit two or three pockets of turbulence. As we approached Orion Point, approach came on and asked where we were going, and I said we were sightseeing and would be turning towards Montauk Point. The controller said that my radar service would be terminated, but to keep the code in the transponder and to call back 5 miles west of Montauk Point. I suspected we were going to go quickly through Providence's airspace, and he didn't want to work the handoff. So we turned southeast towards Montauk Point, and we flew over Gardner's Island, which is between the fishtails of Long Island. As we passed Montauk Bay, I showed Joey the Montauk Yacht Club, where we have stayed as a family on some long weekends, and he pointed out the Montauk Point Airport. I flew to the lighthouse and did a slow, steep turn at 3,000 feet around it. I guess I did learn something after all. I turned to Joey and said, "How many of your friends have seen the lighthouse from this angle?" We both commented on the waves breaking on the point. It was a beautiful sight. As I passed the lighthouse, I asked Joey to keep an eye out for planes while I programmed the GPS for direct to Suffolk County Airport. Once I did that, I turned on the autopilot and trimmed for hands-off flying. Something didn't seem right. We were not turning towards Suffolk County Airport. The autopilot was on, the GPS was programmed, so what was wrong? I thought about it, then it hit me. I turned on the autopilot, but I did not engage it. The autopilot has a toggle switch which powers it up and a button to engage the servos. I forgot to hit the button. Once I did, it intercepted the course nicely and we tracked the course to Suffolk County. I gotta tell you, the Eaglet is a very stable and a joy to fly. Once trimmed, you very easily fly hands off. Even though it's a single-axis autopilot, which means it only has roll capability, not pitch, meaning it will track a heading, but it will not hold altitude. If the plane is trimmed properly, it is just like flying a two-axis autopilot. Going west along the south shore, the tailwind turned into a headwind, and our ground speed dropped to around 87 knots. No biggie, we were enjoying the time flying. I kept pointing out airports and landmarks so that Joey could match them to the chart. There are four things I wanted to teach Joey to do. Follow checklists, check engine gauges, always look for emergency landing sites, and learn how to read charts. I believe this will give him a good foundation to be a safe pilot, even before he starts his formal training. When we were about 10 miles east of Suffolk County, the controller told me to stay out of its Delta airspace. I said that I would be turning south to fly along the south shore. At about 10 miles from Brookhaven, I told the controller that I would be starting my descent. He then terminated my radar service and told me to squawk VFR. One thing I did, whenever I changed direction or altitude, I let the controller know. It was a very relaxed flight, not much traffic. As I approached Brookhaven, I took out my diagram, which shows the approaches to each runway, and handed it to Joey. Since we were landing on 2-4, we needed to fly to the school southwest of the field and fly over the approach end of 3-3 to set up on the 45. I explained all this to Joey and had him find the school. We descended and got to the school at traffic pattern altitude, which was what I planned. I made my call that I was on the 45 for 2-4, and then I saw a black speck coming left to right. At first I thought it was a helicopter flying west of the field. In fact, I pointed out to Joey and told him to keep an eye on it. I then heard someone call that he was on downwind. I looked and did not see anyone. Then I realized that the black speck that I thought was a helicopter was a high-wing airplane. He was on an extended downwind and was not even at the departure end of 2-4 yet. So I had to fall in behind him and extend my downwind so that I was not on top of him. So I followed him in and gave him enough room. The ATIS had reported winds 230 at 11 gusting to 16. This concerned me a little. No big deal in the Diamond Star, but I was still getting used to the light plane. Downwind and base were good. So far I was on airspeed. To compensate for the extended downwind that I had to do because of following the other plane, I went to idle a little later than I normally would. So far so good. Short final, I felt like I might be a little short, so I added a touch of power. Hindsight, I was probably okay. I told Joey that it might be a little bumpy due to the gusts and concentrated on making a good crosswind landing, which I did. I squeaked it. Upwind wheel first, downwind wheel second, and held off the nose wheel. I floated a little longer than I would have liked, but still got off at the first taxiway. What a rush. We taxi back to Mid-Island with Joey guiding us on the taxi diagram while reading the runway signs. When we got back to the FBO, I took Joey into the hangar where I showed him an RV-12, a Super Decathlon, Extra 300, a Yak, a Travel Air, a Messerschmitt, and a Sport Cruiser. Some of them were being worked on, and he seemed to be really enjoying it. I told him that if he liked this, being a mechanic is another option in the field of aviation. Overall, the flight was great. I shared another flight with my son and was able to accomplish most of the goals that I had set out for myself. A couple of shout-outs. First, I would like to thank the Uncontrolled Airspace podcast for mentioning my new podcast in episode 156, Going Haywire. Jack, I really appreciate the kind words. I would also like to give another shout-out to Bill Williams of the Student Pilot Cast. If you're ever interested in learning how to record cockpit audio, you should look at his Student Pilot Cast video number 5. It is really an excellent video on how to do this. In fact, he inspired me to go out and get an intercom recording cable and a digital recorder, and I'm going to try on my next flight to record some cockpit audio. But in general, the Student Pilot Cast is an excellent podcast for those who are learning to fly or those who would just like to brush up on what they've learned while they were learning to fly. Check it out. Another great podcast is the Pilot's Flight Podlog, hosted by Will Hawkins and Dave Allen. One of the best hangar flying podcasts out there. Please tune into that. If you're listening to this and you're not listening to the Pilot's Flight Podlog, you should. Also, I'd like to encourage everyone to join, if you haven't already, mytransponder.com. It is a great social networking site for pilots and aviation enthusiasts. It's out of beta, so please, please join up. It's a great social networking site for us aviation junkies. You can get this podcast at iTunes, your favorite podcatcher, or go to thenewpilotpodblog.blogspot.com. You can reach me at thenewpilotpodblog@gmail.com, or you can follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/newpilotpodblog. The intro and closing song is John Mellencamp's My Aeroplane. Thank you everyone for listening, so now get out there and exercise your freedom to fly.